This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We hadn't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzak.
I know. I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
So we are about to incept everybody real quick. You guys remember Inception? Did we see that movie? That when that came out, everyone was like, dude, this movie's so mind-blowing, and I can't believe it. And I just remember watching it semi-recently. And Inception is a really good movie, but like I didn't have that bomb drop moment that I feel like everybody was talking about when that movie came out.
But it was at the end. You didn't know if he was still dreaming or if he actually woke up.
I feel like you kind of knew, though.
No, because I hope we didn't just spoil
it
for someone.
Oh, the movie's 3 years old. Like, there has to be a time limit.
That's on you, then.
Well, it was like I was listening to a podcast the other week, and somebody spoiled The Wire. And at first, I kind of got mad about it because I love The Wire, and I've seen The Wire. It didn't spoil it for me, but I'm like, for anyone who hasn't seen The Wire, that's a major spoiler. I can't believe he would ruin that for them. But then I'm like, oh, right, The Wire aired between like 2000 and 2008.
Yeah, that's on you.
So I guess, you know, they probably should be on
you. I mean, they gave you, what, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years?
Yeah. So I know Leo was on a roll then because he had Shutter Island come out like a few months before that, and that's another great movie.
Yeah. No, I like both of those movies, honestly.
Yeah, but anyway, so the reason we were incepting you is because we want to talk about our intro. So we've had this intro for pretty much all of the podcasts, the general form of it at least. So the guy who did our intro voice is this guy named Steve. Shout out to Steve. He's a great guy. He did the production for us like, it was 3 years ago now or so, because Justin voiced the original intro way back in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, we've done some tweaking on the effects. Obviously, the quotes change up, but Steve's vocals have been the key, really, of everything. And I guess, so we were talking about our intro this morning, and I don't really know why Tim has been silent. He's sitting here. This isn't just a Justin and I podcast. But, you know, we're thinking about changing the intro, and we want to ask you guys, what do you think?
We'll give it a whole new look, new voice, new everything. Maybe no intro quotes, quicker. Get in, get out.
Yeah.
Well, in this theory, get it started and then get right into the content.
So. Yeah, maybe a midweek intro. Or also, if you really like the intro and are super offended that we're talking about changing it, like, please let us know. Because we like this intro, too. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's a reason we've kept it as long as we have.
3 years.
Yeah.
So
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time. So we'll see what people think about it. But, I mean, we're open to change.
Well, speaking of change, well, nothing's really changing, but welcome everybody to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left is my suddenly mute co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Outside of my string of L's, I took to Marcus / SJ post ankle injury at the end of my second year. My one-on-one resume is flawless.
I feel like that's got to be Keith. Only because of the Marcus mentioned, so I feel like maybe it's Keith.
Spencer Dinwiddie.
Was he referring to Marcus Thornton?
I assume so. He doesn't really elaborate, but I assume that's who he's talking about.
No, good for Spencer Dinwiddie, man. He played himself back into the league. Brooklyn is the place to do that. That is the beauty of, you know, being in that. That's probably the only good thing about being in the scenario that Brooklyn's in, is that you can just shamelessly try out talent and give these guys second chances and see who sticks. And, you know, I mean, that's what the Sixers did in the first year of the process, where you just literally are trying out anybody that you can find, essentially. And occasionally you get a gem.
Shotgun method.
Yeah.
Shoot at a wall and hopefully something falls over.
Mm-hmm. So we've had it up for a couple of weeks. Obviously, a really big dream of ours is to go down to NBA Summer League, but not the Orlando one. We want to go to the real one, NBA Summer League Las Vegas.
Yeah, it is definitely a really big dream of ours, and it's something that we are actively working towards and something that we are calling on our wonderful listeners to help us make this dream come true. And we have created a GoFundMe page. You can check it out. It's on our Facebook page, Drivin' Dish NBA Podcast. We've also tweeted it a few times. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Drivin' Dish NBA. And yeah, seriously, so the, any amount helps. There are certain levels. If you donate a certain amount, we'll give you a gift, essentially, that's all detailed on the page. Anyways, check it out. We'd really appreciate it. It would be, you know, like I said, you'd be helping our dream come true. And
in a way,
it'd make you feel good inside.
In a way, it also helps them out because we'll come out with some really cool episodes and some really good content because we're going to be talking to the players.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, them. We are fully, like, we're not going on. This is not a vacation for us. Put it this way. Like, we're not going to Vegas to drink and gamble. Like, we're going to Vegas. We will be covering Summer League. We'll be in the building, watching games, getting interviews, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, so go to drivingdishpodcast.com and all the information is right at the top.
And one of the things we like to do on every episode, another thing you guys can help us out with, is leaving us a review on iTunes or whatever you are listening on. It helps other people find us and potentially listen as well.
Yeah, we got one in the UK this week. It's by Sean O'Palo. And Sean O'Palo, the title of the review is Easy Listening. It's a 5-star review. Easy. I just really wanted to do that. And the review says, a nice way to get to grips with basketball and understand the narrative. There are other sports out there, other villains, other heroes, other rivalries. Drivin' Dish is a great and relaxed way to stay in touch with another sport. They'll also digress and make you laugh once in a while.
Ooh, here's a good question. In the podcasting world, are we considered heroes or villains?
Well, this could be a Dark Knight type deal.
Live
long enough
to
see yourself become the villain. Maybe we started as heroes and became villains. Maybe we started as villains, honestly, if you look back to the old episodes.
We have a really long-time listener, Imperious Lex, that all he does is stay tweeting about superheroes and that kind of thing. And
he would be able to tell us.
He would be able to tell us. So, Imperious Lex, if you're listening, are we the hero or are we the villain?
I'm worried about the answer, honestly.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drivin' Dish Podcast.
We need to know now.
They just can't catch a Blake. After averaging 25 points in the first round, Blake Griffin will miss the remainder of the postseason with an injury to his big toe, of all things. And this might be a game changer. Rajon Rondo out for the remainder of the playoffs with a thumb fracture. The Bulls have a team option on him next season. And the Knicks will be looking for trade options for Melo this summer. The Celtics are a possibility as a coaching staff was interested in acquiring him at the deadline. Danny Ainge didn't want to pull the trigger. Melo still hasn't waived his no trade clause. In a humbling moment, Chris Paul in Utah saw a young Clippers fan wearing a Clippers jersey and gave his to the kid. And if you are listening to this on Earth Day, happy Earth Day. Shout out to Gerald Green, Draymond Green, and Danny Green. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
All right, this is the part of the show where we want to talk about one of our awesome sponsors, and that is SeatGeek. If you don't have the free SeatGeek app, you should download it. Again, it is free for any iPhone, Android, or other device. SeatGeek is the smartest way to find tickets for all those basketball games. We know we're in the middle of the playoffs right now, so get into that late playoff action you want to see live and up close, because we know there's nothing like being in the building for the biggest games of the year. The conference finals are coming up soon. The finals, we're creeping towards it. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. Now, I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to buy basketball tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find this seat for any game I'm looking for. And we do want to stress, it's not just basketball. You can do it for other sports. Baseball season is in full swing. NHL playoffs also happening right now.
Hey, I have a fun story about SeatGeek. I just used it. So I went and I got some Counting Crows and Matchbox 20 tickets, fourth row.
Super 90s.
Right. I got them for $90 on SeatGeek, and while that sounds like a lot, when I went on Ticketmaster, they were $350.
And there were no fees when you went to check out, which is pretty great.
But they tell you what they are up front. It's not like when you check out, Ticketmaster, all of a sudden it's a whole bunch
right,
more
right, there's
expensive.
Not an extra $50 on my account.
Yes. But yeah, so I ended up getting those $90 seats that were $350 using the SeatGeek app.
Yeah, and you can tell whether they're a good value, because on the SeatGeek app, if it's a good value, it'll be in green. If it's a bad value, it'll be in red.
And these were bright green.
Yeah. Always good to have them bright green. And SeatGeek, it's backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop with confidence. And best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So this is what you got to do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, and enter the promo code DISH, like Drive and Dish NBA podcast, or I ate off a dish last night. And SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you made your first purchase. All three of us have done it. We've had multiple listeners that will also vouch for it. Seriously, check it out. Download the free SeatGeek app. Type in the promo code DISH and save yourself $20.
And Kevin, talking about the green dots that you find in SeatGeek makes me want to start the episode off with Gerald Green and how he started for the Celtics, and the Celtics actually won against the Bulls. I asked you guys, is Gerald Green the answer?
So this I find this funny.
Right.
Because the Celtics can't rebound. So they say, well, what do? We can't rebound. Let's take out Amir Johnson and throw in Gerald Green. You got to give him credit where credit's due. But if you want to talk about their rebounding in that game in particular, the Celtics in that game had 7 offensive rebounds compared to the Bulls, 15. They had 30 defensive rebounds compared to the Bulls, 37. So the Bulls out-rebounded the Celtics 52-37 overall with the Gerald Green in the lineup. I was just surprised that Amir Johnson, so if you look at how much playing time he's been getting since they started the series, as you know, he hopped in the first game getting about 20 minutes, then it went down to 8, and then went down to 5. So not only did they start...
Mm-hmm.
Gerald Green.
He's slowly losing his minutes to him.
Well,
could it be a matchup thing?
They're playing Marcus Smart a lot more and Rozier and stuff too. So I wouldn't say he's losing it
to Green specifically.
But Amir Johnson is, I mean, he's showing himself to be useless in this series.
Well, it's just 100% of a matchup thing. You know, sometimes when you're back up against the wall, you just have to gamble sometimes. And it reminds me going back to the finals in 2015. When the Cavs were up 2-1 against the Warriors, and the Cavs were just physically beating on the Warriors, just running them out, and Steve Kerr doubled down and went with this hyper small lineup, and you know, obviously history, they win the championship. You know, the Bulls this series have been just beating up the Celtics, whether it's on the glass, whether it's they've been keeping the Celtics off their game. You know, Brad Stevens, it looks crazy, because what's the Celtics' problem been all year? Is that they can't rebound. They are one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. Brad Stevens basically says, yeah, we know, takes Amir Johnson out of the lineup and really doubles down, extra small. But he said he wanted the lineup to get more athletic, to get more out in transition more, to shoot more three-pointers. You put Gerald Green in the lineup. You know, this is the type of decision that you have to make, that it's going to look either really good or really bad in a vacuum. But when you're desperate and when you're up against the wall, those are the types of coaching decisions you need to make. Credit to Brad Stevens. It worked. That was a wire-to-wire victory. You know, they took advantage of Rondo not being there, and they got out and they ran. They hit more three-pointers than Chicago did. They opened up their game a little bit, which they haven't been able to do the first two games of the series.
I also thought it was kind of funny for a team, and I think, Tim, you probably tweeted this from the Drive and Dish account, but I thought it was funny for a team aspect that the Celtics are all about, where this young, athletic team, and I'm not saying Gerald Green's not athletic, but they bring in this 31-year-old to come in and play with these young guns, and it works. I mean, yeah, like Kevin was saying, they kind of went with a small ball lineup, and it seemed to be working. I just, from the Bulls side, though, man, Lopez has been a monster.
Oh, he's just been bullying them.
Yeah, he's been feasting.
Oh, my gosh. And it's so funny, because I was looking at it. I was like, Rondo is playing really well. Lopez's brother is killing it in the playoffs. What year are we in?
What Dwayne year? Wade. Dwayne Wade shooting. Wait, he's shooting like 60% or something from three.
Everyone shooting so well from three. So I was like, welcome to the playoffs where everyone can shoot a three.
While we're talking Dwayne Wade, though, one of my favorite conspiracy theory tweets, not to get off topic, was remember how Dwayne Wade had his elbow injury and was going to miss the season? Mm-hmm. Well, anyone who's a super Heat fan, there's a conspiracy theory that LeBron has like these massive HGH chambers in Miami, and that's like when
he went home, right?
Basically, when LeBron gets pissed and starts to get tired and starts losing, he, you know, takes that week-long break to Miami and come playoff form is obviously ready to dominate again, like we're seeing him do these playoffs. And so the rumor is the conspiracy theory is that Dwayne Wade visited LeBron's laboratory and now suddenly his elbow injury that was done for the season, ready to go, let's play first round.
So the Bulls, before they made it into the playoffs, obviously around trade deadline, Jimmy Butler was a huge topic about how he was going to leave, Celtics being one of the teams that was where he was possibly going to go to. If the Bulls win the first round, or even the way they're competing right now, even if they don't, has the Bulls play restored enough faith in you for you to say, okay, you know, work with this going forward, this is a good team and you can work from here on out? Or do you still think they need to make some major changes?
Oh, make no bones about it. I don't think even if they win the first round of these playoffs that it justifies what Chicago has done over the last year. Like, I think that organization has been a mess with no direction. They just happen to, you know, take advantage of some things at the right time. And the fact that Jimmy Butler is amazing. Like, that's the one thing that if you take nothing else from the series with Chicago is that, hey, Jimmy Butler is amazing, and there is no scenario in which Jay Crowder should ever be the centerpiece of your Jimmy Butler trade.
To put it into perspective.
That's what I've learned from this series about that.
Just to put it into perspective, Jimmy Butler shooting 22 points in the playoffs per game, 40% field goal, 28 from three, but I mean, that's not too surprising, I guess. Doing well with free throws, about six or eight rebounds, about four assists, a block, and two steals a game. If you're the Bulls, do you still potentially look into trading Jimmy Butler, or is he your guy going forward?
Absolutely.
You keep him no matter what?
No, I think you look at trading him.
Oh, and why is that? You just don't think the way the team's constructed now can do any more than what they're doing? Like, this is the top.
I don't think you win with Jimmy Butler as your superstar.
You think he's a number two
guy? And I don't
guy?
Think that, I don't, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, more or less, right? Like, is mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler ever going to lead you to a championship?
Well,
I,
do we know that? He has been kind of surrounded by BS. Everybody's always been injured, or he's had these rosters that don't make any sense and don't have any shooting. I don't think we know whether Jimmy Butler is capable of leading a team to a championship. He's never had the supporting cast to even try to make a deep run.
I mean, that's fine. That's fair. I don't think he is. But no, I mean, to answer your question, no, we don't know that. We don't know that until his career is over.
I'm just surprised. Like, my reason to sell on Jimmy would be is if you totally want to just tear the franchise down and rebuild, which you could argue if you're Chicago, that franchise has a lot of needs. They don't really have any young guys coming up at all. But at the same time, like, to what we talked about earlier, I think Jimmy Butler is so good that there better be a deal that blows my socks off, because, you know, I think back now and I look at some of those Chicago packages and I look at some of these other teams that were making deals for Jimmy Butler, and you see in these playoffs what Jimmy Butler can do, and you just get reminded that, oh, right, you don't replace talent like this that easily. There aren't just, you know, you never really get value back in these trades most of the time.
I think it's worth mentioning, and this isn't a dig at Jimmy Butler, but if you look at the list of players on each team, I guess if you consider them star players, Jimmy Butler comes in around 16-17 on the top scoring people for the playoffs. I know it's only three games, but that's also saying, you know, like Bradley Beal scoring more, Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, John Wall, Paul George, which is expected, but if you're the star on your team, do you expect more than, I guess, 22 points per game?
Right. I mean, you know, it took him 21 shots to get 14 points in the, you know, the third game of the series. But mm-hmm. I also don't want to judge somebody's value off of three games
right.
in a playoff series.
Well, and
series.
That's the thing. It's like you can look at the third game and be super low on Jimmy, and you can look at the first game and think he's the best player in the league. So it's just like, you know.
Well, another part of the Bulls, what could be attributed to the Bulls' loss to the Celtics is Rondo's thumb.
Ah, poor guy. I am so tired of damn injuries.
Ruining
star players.
Gobert.
in the first round. And Kevin Love last year, it's just like, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, how come Paul Zipser doesn't get injured? It's always somebody
major. But Zipser was playing well for the Bulls, too.
And he absolutely is. But whenever we see these injuries, it is all, last year with Kevin Love, Rudy Gobert, to your point, Rajon Rondo. Why is it always a major player? It's never like the seventh man on the bench that tears it or sprains an ACL.
And they're not playing.
Right. Well, whatever. I mean, the Gobert one was the first play of the game.
Like, easily 15 seconds in, and I was just like, and also, wait, hold on. I have a bone to pick with Philly in general. I went home. I understand the NHL playoffs are on. I went to a bar in Philly. Every single TV was NHL. No basketball. They stuck me in the corner of the bar with the smallest TV, and they put on a game and slowly moved it down the bar because other people asked for the TV.
That happened to me when I went to a bar recently too, and I can't remember. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, there was football on every single TV, and it was during the NBA playoffs. And I was like, dude, can I have this one over in the corner? And they just like gave me a hard time. Like I could see the look on.
They
like,
weren't happy about it.
Please,
but so 20 TVs. Imagine this. I'm at the corner of the bar with the TV right in front of me, minding my own business. All of a sudden, that changes to news. Someone put on news. And I was like, yo, what happened? She goes, oh, sorry, someone asked for that TV to be changed. I was like, I've been here for 2 hours watching that game. So they put it on the TV next. So now I'm kind of looking a little diagonal. That one gets changed back to NHL. So they move it one more down. So now I'm looking three TVs down on the other side of the bar to watch this game. And I'm like, guys, this sucks. Like, I just want to watch the game. And that's what spun my my tweet asking, where's your favorite place to watch an NBA game? At the bar, at home, at the stadium?
Well, where in Philly were you?
I was actually in the suburb. I was in Lansdale. But it's still like... Come on, not one TV can be designated for basketball.
Philly loves hockey. That is the one thing. It's like Philly does love hockey. The Flyers in past 10, 15 years have been a much hotter ticket than the Sixers. Right. I think that's changing. But in Philly specifically, the reality is the Flyers have been better than the Sixers.
Right. Still, I had a bone to pick. I picked it.
That is surprising, though. I mean, NHL playoffs are great. Like, you never need to sell me on the NHL playoffs. If you guys don't watch the NHL playoffs, like, if basketball's got a break or the games are a blowout and you just, like, put hockey on.
Girlfriend's a huge Rangers fan.
I gotta ask you a question.
Okay.
So Kevin put up...
Yeah, I know. That's really unfortunate.
Kevin put up a midweek...
Were the first questions about hockey.
the first, like, 5 minutes of the show, Kevin and Joe Paterno. Did I pronounce that right?
Pantorno.
Pantorno. Joe Pantorno were talking about the NHL.
I thought the same thing.
And I was just
like,
thinking to myself, how long has Kevin been waiting to do this?
A long time. Dude, I know. I said with Joe, it was like... You even hear me say it in that episode. I was like, there are two things I want to talk about while in between our Knicks conversation, because I know I'm not going to be able to talk about them on any other episode. NHL playoffs and Freddie Gibbs' new album. Because neither you listen to Freddie Gibbs. Freddie Gibbs, for those of you who don't listen, is a rapper, and he's amazing, and you all should listen to him. And, just appreciate those things. Got to know your audience, man.
Did this make you want to start? I was listening to it, and I was thinking to myself, Kevin should start an NHL podcast.
We like low-key, Andrew and I. Everyone doesn't know Andrew, but Tim knows Andrew. So for the sake, our friend Andrew have genuinely talked about it a little bit. My problem has been, A, I haven't had enough time, and B, I just don't know the NHL the way I know the NBA.
But that being said,
like, there's a lot more players in the NHL.
You could have probably said the same thing when we started the Drive and Dish three years ago, right?
True. I feel like, to an extent, definitely.
But I will say, like, it's easier to learn about the NBA than it is about the NHL. Number one, because the players, for the most part, don't all have European names.
I was
going
to say, every single name in hockey is like impossible.
The rosters are shorter.
That's the biggest thing. Is on any NBA roster, you're going to have 12 players, 15 if you count the full roster. So realistically, but at the end of the day,
how many of those 15 do you actually talk about?
Like, how many guys are, especially come 10, playoff 11, time? It's 8-9 people rotations. Like, you got guys who are sitting on the bench who are never really going to see game action. Where in the NHL, you roll out 12 people just on your four lines that you run, and that's not including your defense and your goalies.
Fair enough.
Okay, that being said, for the playoffs being 8 and 9 player rotations, looking at the last Bulls-Celtics game,
They're actually
rotating.
The Celtics
played 12 and the Bulls played 13. That being said, the Bulls need shooting. I completely forgot that the Bulls had Anthony Morrow on their team. Now, he ended up playing 4 minutes in garbage time.
Yeah. He still made, he was 2 for 2, though.
I'm surprised the Bulls aren't trotting out Anthony Morrow at least 6, 7, 8 minutes a game when they need some shooting on the floor.
Dude, I'm saying, I know we talked about him earlier, but Zisper has been really exciting to watch. Like, shooting-wise, I don't know. I like seeing him out there shooting 40% from three, 42% from the field. Like, he's been low-key pretty good for him.
So, not to completely change topics on you guys, but...
We're going to completely change topics?
Yes.
Well, hold on. Oh, hold on. Okay, then before you go, because mm-hmm. I have one more question. Mm-hmm. Rondo goes down. Mm-hmm. Immediately after that, Nate Robinson puts onto his social media begging the Bulls to sign him.
I don't think you can. I don't know, but I don't think that you can sign a player mid-playoffs.
Nate Robinson is not going to help the Bulls.
That was the other question. So just seeing some fan reactions, like Nate Robinson stays begging NBA teams to pick him up.
He's also, wasn't going to be a football player, whatever happened to that?
He was going to be anything. I think he just wants to be on a field or a court.
Right.
I respect playing. It. How's Nate go overseas?
I don't think he wants
anywhere
to.
Anywhere in the U.S.
Go to the D-League. I mean, D-League. I mean,
you
know, I know that.
Well, he was playing in the
D-League.
Yeah, league.
Yeah. I know, and he was doing fine.
No, yeah, he was playing in the D-League.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Sixers had him, the 87ers.
Yeah, he was doing fine, too. He wasn't doing that bad. Yeah.
Hmm? Well, I don't know about that. He had one. His first game, he had a play where he put the ball through somebody's legs and, like, went around him and laid it up and in, and it was sick. But he also, I think, shot, like, it was like 2 of 15.
Wait, Kevin,
like
do you
that.
Spend time watching the D-League?
No. I
was going to say, that didn't seem like something you would do.
What, Nate or me? No, I don't. I have barely enough time to watch all the NBA games, let alone watch the D-League games.
That was one of my favorite things on
unless someone can get me like a time turner, like in Harry Potter, where I can just stall time and watch, you know, games and catch up and then let the world come back into life.
People were posting on Reddit saying the Jazz got really good while you weren't watching, and the first like 12 comments were like, right, because NBA Reddit, we have time to watch every damn basketball game.
I mean, it's the first round of the playoffs to me is so hard,
right?
Because there's so many games. So
well,
what
you have to split screen it. So you have to.
I can't split. I can't pay attention to games.
I do.
Once.
I do one. By the way, Friday night. My question to the NBA world: how do you have two games going on at the same exact time? Like they had two games going. You had to choose.
Oh, with Utah Clippers and.
Rockets and Thunder. So what I did is I had the Rockets Thunder game on my TV and the Jazz game on my computer, but it's just like you couldn't schedule this any differently so that there wouldn't be an overlap. Like I don't, like now you're making people pick, and no offense to Utah, there's just more fans for OKC and the Rockets.
Well, everyone's
going to
watch
see that
the matchup. Westbrook-Harden's a more intriguing matchup than Clippers-Utah is, even though I could argue that Clippers-Utah is a better series.
Also, they had it on NBA TV and like ESPN2. Like, what?
Yeah, so it's really hard for me during the playoffs. So what I watch the second half
of each
of every single game. I cannot watch every single game. Mm-hmm. So this is how I'm going to have to do it because I only have so much time.
Well, I was going to say that Friday night's game you missed Gordon Hayward dropping like 21 in the first quarter and they still lost.
I watch the highlights and I watch the second half. That being said, so we have been talking so much. And before we move on, I don't want to move on to a different series, but I just want to point out that in that third game, the Utah Jazz and Clippers, that the Utah Jazz grabbed 3 offensive rebounds. Can we?
But
like everyone
missing,
talks about the Celtics being bad rebounders. I know.
I was going to say, actually, when we were talking about it, the first thing I looked up was how, like, I just assumed off the top of my head, the Celtics, out of all the playoff teams for the playoffs, were the bottom team for rebounds.
Nope.
It's the Jazz.
Yep.
But Gobert's gone.
It. I know.
So that's a big part of it. Like, you can't fault, well, you can, but you can't. at the same time.
Three.
That first game is huge, though, for
you have
Utah.
To get, you have to get more than three.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you have to. I mean, you have to get more than three.
Yeah. That first game is so big for Utah looking back with Gobert being out. Because, I mean, if they drop that first one, obviously they're down 3-0 in the hole now. They're not coming back
At least
they can stay afloat and give themselves a chance if they can extend the series.
I saw the announcers talking about Joe Johnson being the best in the league, and I think in history, for clutch shot situations, like
his
shooting percentage.
He's got to be up there.
Yeah, he's. I mean, that first game when he hit that shot, oh my gosh.
Years is the thing. Like, he's been doing it since he was on Atlanta.
So let me take you back to that bar that I'm now watching three TVs across. Joe Johnson hits the shot. Everyone else is watching hockey. I stand up. At this point, I'm like 4 or 5 whiskey ginger doubles in.
So Justin's really loud.
And I get up and I go, holy
wow. 4 or 5 double whiskey gingers. That's
awful.
That brings me back to like the beaches when I couldn't walk.
Yeah, it was such an awesome shot and everyone stared at me.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Joe Johnson.
This bar being like not really that loud, kind of the more where you like go to chill and have a conversation and sip
on beer.
It
kind of is, except they were
Justin
playing.
And Justin just being tanked and yelling about Joe Johnson.
It was such a good shot.
Joe Johnson's been so good.
Oh, it was a good pickup for them. We said
that's why they brought him here.
No, it really is, though. Like, it's exactly why.
I saw Mr. Joe. So, but I want to ask you guys.
Okay.
All right, so there's been a lot of talk about Paul George through these playoffs, blah, blah, blah.
I was going to bring this up, so good.
Don't want to go into the Paul George and which teammate he's going to blast today. I don't care about that. What I do care about is Magic Johnson. He goes on Jimmy Kimmel. And Jimmy Kimmel asks him about Paul George, and Magic Johnson responds with, well, I've been to CBA school, I've been to tampering school, mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to say. And Jimmy Kimmel asks him, okay, well, if you see Paul George on vacation, what are you going to do? Magic Johnson sitting there, I'm going to wink. And he's doing it with both eyes, like, really wide and everything.
Because he can't, like, wink.
I'm telling you, Paul George is going to the Lakers. And I'm just wondering to you guys.
That means that pick better convey this year, by the way.
What is the package that you are requesting from the Lakers for Paul George?
Here's the thing. They should have went for him at the trade deadline because they did. But I think he's brought up his stock now. He's averaging 32-9-8 and shooting 45 from three. Like, he's playing really well.
And
no matter how much you want to hate on the dude for his comments or whatever, which, Tim, I actually disagreed with you on the last episode of you
What's
being
that?
Upset of Paul George's comments. I agree they shouldn't have been said, but he is a star player on a team. He should be getting the last shot.
Well, okay, fine. Well, how about this? He made the correct play. He got double teamed.
Right.
He He gave it away. It was a wide open look. It's as good of a look as you're going to get to close out an NBA game. He didn't pass it to a rook. His teammate missed it. You don't blame the teammate for that, or if you want the ball back, you run a high screen and roll, and you don't wait until 3.5 seconds left to play trying to get something going.
I agree. I just think it should have been, I think everyone on the court, their goal should have been get the ball back to Paul George.
Well, I think it
but
was.
But he can't do it that quickly. But, I mean, he had a wide open shot.
Got to practice it more.
There's 3 seconds left.
I understand.
PG
just
wasn't
saying.
Open until there was like 0.5 left.
That's fine. What was the...
He made the correct basketball
Who was the
play?
Guy on... I think it was Joe Ingles. They got... It wasn't like any crazy play, but there was like 0.5 on the shot clock. And I think Hill or someone threw it to him, and he caught it midair and shot it and made it.
Joe Ingles had a play where he was wide open, again, not to get too distracted, where they hit him with a corner three. He was wide open, had the look. He literally stared at DeAndre Jordan and basically said, here, are you going to close out on me a little bit? Like, waited till like you could kind of look DeAndre right in the eyes, and he just stepped back and splashed
Joe Ingles has been, like, I really liked him.
Joe Ingles is going to get paid.
He was shooting
off-season.
Friday night. He was shooting 100% from three. He was jacking up these shots with such confidence. He would like hold the hand up like it was going in, and I was like, man. And I saw him make one. I'm like, man, he must be having a really good 3-point shooting night. I looked up. He's 25%.
Is it too hot takey of me to think he might get like a Chris Middleton contract? I'm not saying he's as good as Chris Middleton, but I feel like he could get a contract like that.
Wait, are you guys not going to answer my Lakers question?
I'm going to answer your Lakers question.
We kind of got distracted, sorry. No, I okay. they're definitely going to make a big push for him. I think he fits in pretty well with the Lakers squad. The age isn't too much different. We've talked about this a lot.
No, but what do you want back if you're the Pacers?
You want
a D'Angelo Russell. You want a Julius Randle. You want
Clarkson, maybe?
How many picks do you want? Do you want their
Clarkson in a first round?
They have their Magic pick.
Yeah.
They also, in theory, have their pick.
Give it all.
Fine, but what do you realistically, what can you ask for and get back? Because all signs pointing that dude is going to the Lakers.
I'm going with, you can have Paul George. I want your first pick this year. I want Clarkson. And then give me the Magic pick. And then we can see when you say no, which they probably will say no to that, then you can see the first thing you drop is the Magic pick. I think you hold on to Clarkson in the first round.
Well, it depends it depends how the lottery plays out. Because the reality is the Lakers aren't going to have a lot. Like, if they lose their pick this year, if they drop out of that three, which that win streak made that a lot more possible at the end of the season for them, if they drop out and that pick goes to four or five and it conveys to the Sixers and they lose that 2019 first to Orlando, that puts them a little bit more of in a hole because you can't trade the 2018 pick.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you can't offer a first rounder. I'm not giving Paul George up if I'm not getting a first rounder. There'll be somebody else other than the Lakers who will gladly take Paul George's services and give me a better package. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to trade Paul George to LA if you're the Lakers. And I think if Paul George gets traded to another team that's on the cusp of doing something great,
Boston.
I don't necessarily think he's going to run off to LA either. I know that's a popular narrative if he hits free agency, but Boston is going to make a play at Paul George.
And
There's
Boston
no doubt
has
about
way
that.
More to offer in
way
terms
more
of
to offer
looking. From the Pacers
If I'm Indy, seeing what Paul George has done and what he did to close the season, regardless of what, like, the Pacers are going to go down because LeBron is maybe the greatest player in NBA history. Like, that's what happened in Game 3 is LeBron choked the soul out of them. Mm-hmm. That's what greats do. It happened during the Jordan years. There are multiple great teams who never got over the hump because Jordan was just that good. That's what happened with LeBron here. It doesn't take away from Paul George. Paul George is still a superstar. If I'm the Pacers, I'm not even taking the Lakers seriously. If it's not a minimum a first rounder, probably may even have to be two. You have to maybe give me one down the road. Some combo of D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram and something with those guys. I don't think Clarkson has a ton of value. If you want to put Clarkson in that mix, fine. But I think Clarkson's numbers have gone down, so I don't think you're going to be able to sell him as much as you can sell some of these other guys. But you're going to, at the minimum, I think, if you're the Lakers, have to give up two of your young guys. So let's say the three are D'Angelo, Brandon Ingram, and Julius Randle, and a pick. And I'm not taking less than that. If the Lakers aren't offering me any of their young core, their first rounder, and I'm telling them to take it right back to the West Coast and get out of here.
Well, see, and that's why I'm thinking from the Celtics side. If you're the Pacers, getting rid of Paul George means you're going to try to build around Turner. So you want a bunch
of... Because the Pacers aren't going to re-sign Jeff Teague, right? So if they can
Before we move on to him, I was going to say, if LeBron, and we may know this by the time you're listening, but if LeBron beats the Pacers in four games, this will be... three straight years in three different cities that Jeff Teague has been swept by LeBron James.
Right, it's really impressive.
He honestly can't get away from this, dude.
Think about how many great teams, and I don't want to say great, but how many teams that maybe could have made noise any other year have just been ruined by LeBron? I mean, go back to that Indy team when Paul George and them were at the top of the world. That's a
Paul
great
George,
team
Stevenson,
that never made
Hibbert.
It to the finals. They were a game away, but they didn't make it. Mm-hmm. You look at Toronto. Toronto's window's probably closing. They're not going. It looks like they're not going to do it. That Atlanta team won 60 games.
Hey, just really quick, you said that Jordan Clarkson's numbers have gone down this year. You compare that to his numbers this year to his career averages. His points per game is higher. His effective field goal percentage is higher. His PER is actually a little bit lower. But, I mean, overall, if you look at Jordan Clarkson this year, that while he's, if anything, he's stagnated. His numbers haven't gone down. I mean, he's shooting the highest career effective field goal percentage that he has.
But he's
gotten
better, is the point.
That's fine, but his numbers haven't gone down.
I think with Clarkson, my theory with asking for him is if I were the Lakers, the narrative to me feels like he would be the first to go.
Oh, it would be. Clarkson is easily the least of these guys in their future plans.
Right. So, and
whether it's age, whether it's ability, whether it's the repetitiveness with having D'Angelo Russell, whether it's the possibility of getting Lonzo Ball in the draft, regardless, like,
right.
Also, if the Lakers get one, I'm really curious to see if they take Lonzo over Markelle Fultz, because I feel like the it's being pushed that way. But let's just get this out of the way now. Markelle Fultz is a way better prospect in my eyes than Lonzo Ball.
Like, I don't agree.
Markelle to me is the clear number one prospect. It's not even close to me. Here's Markelle and here's everybody else. Like, see, I think he's John Wall.
I don't agree with that.
Why?
Because I like Lonzo Ball's court vision a little bit better. I like his defense a little bit better. The only thing I don't like about Lonzo Ball is his dad.
And, it, well,
and like
yeah.
that to me would make his me not dad, draft
his
him.
Shot doesn't worry you?
No, because I mean it does to an extent, because I think that the defenders are just going to make him go right where he's going to, you know, come up with that awkward jumper. But his shot in particular, no, I really love his court vision, and I like his defense a whole lot better than I like Markelle Fultz.
His dad, in my opinion, is trying to make a sports version of the Kardashians.
Well, I get what his dad is trying to do, and like I respect what his dad is trying to do and brand them. But like at some point it stops, and that's the thing where it's like LeVar Ball has gone too far like two or three times already. And it's like, dude, you just gotta stop saying things.
It
gets to a point where it's like you're going to hurt your son's career. I'm all about getting your sons out there, because the three Ball kids, if they all play to their potential, are going to be in the NBA for a long time. That's a powerful brand, potentially, if they're all superstars. I get that and I respect that. But, like, at some point you have to prevent your brand from being treated as a joke. And that's what I feel like they're already running the risk of doing. That's just a joke.
When he made the comment about his son's team losing because the white people... I was just like, dude, you thought what will offend the most people? That's what I'm going to say.
Well, yeah. No,
like, I was like, come on, man. Like, dude.
It's just whoever drafts him is going to have to deal with his dad for the next 8 to 12 years.
Yes.
And Kevin and I were talking about this at a bar, and so it's repeating the conversation between us, but not to somebody listening. Mm. And so I was talking to somebody that has worked in an NBA organization before. He's like, look, if you have somebody that's willing to pop off like that, every TV and radio outlet's going to put a mic in front of them all the time.
Yeah.
They will.
And so if
look at ESPN, they're doing it.
Exactly. So if you're a GM and you're like, do I want to put up with this for the next 8 to 12? I'm not saying you don't. I just think it's going to make a lot of teams look really hard at Lonzo Ball, especially because there's so much other talent in this draft right here. And if he doesn't go number two and he doesn't go number three, how far does he drop before takes him?
I don't think there's any way.
That's what I'm going to be watching.
Well, and I know, and you and I talk, and at the bar I said to you is, I don't think there's any way he drops out of the top three. Even with his dad, even with it being a headache, like, the kid is talented. I think he can be a franchise point guard. I don't think you let that go. And I think that, but I do think that's another reason to add to the Fultz thing, is that there's no distraction there. Like, Markelle Fultz did a lot on a really bad Washington team. Like, I know you're not a college guy, but that dude had nothing to work with. Like, Lonzo Ball was playing with guys that are probably going to, well, one guy that is going pro, but a few guys that are going to go pro. Like, Fultz was really doing everything by himself. And
except for defense.
I'm super high on
that. I know you are. And that's always been the most surprising thing to me, because you're such a defensive guy, but you ignore it with some players.
Because I think when his offensive upside is that good, I don't think you just don't draft that, because he has, like, everybody's going to have that one flaw. Like, I'm not expecting everybody to be a perfectly well-rounded player. Like, Fultz is going to have defensive issues, but is so good on offense that you can find defensive guys to put around him.
I also think, I look at it, and this is just from a Sixers perspective, and this is why I think Kevin's not worried about the defensive side, is the Sixers need offense.
Right.
Sixers get Markelle Fultz, our rebuild has officially become idiot-proof, in my opinion. The only thing that could stop it is injuries. Like, I think with a healthy Embiid, Simmons, and Markelle Fultz, like, we're going to like, you would win games regardless of what you do to that roster. There's too much talent there. It's just the injury.
So speaking of talent, and we can move on because we've talked about this for a bit, but I want to ask you guys, if you had to pick right now who the best player in these playoff games has been, who are you picking? Are you picking LeBron?
Yeah.
Are you picking Westbrook? Are you picking Harden? Kawhi?
LeBron.
Giannis?
Like,
Giannis.
He's been so good.
Oh, my God.
He's been good.
It's still LeBron's league, though. I'm still taking LeBron every time.
Nah.
LeBron had 41, 13, and 10 the other night.
I'm not saying
without
it's
Kyrie
not great.
And Kevin. No, I know. I mean, Giannis has been great, too. Giannis is amazing. I have a question for you guys, because I know, because since you both said Giannis, and I want to ask you this since I know we're going into the Bucks now.
Well, sort of.
I only have one question about the series. Well, we can get into that.
No, I'll ask it quick. We talk about LeBron's reign at the top of the Eastern Conference. People wonder when it's going to come to an end. Which of these young teams, which of these contenders can finally knock them off? Is it outlandish for me to think that the Bucks are probably the team that comes out of the East next after the Cavs? Like, I think the Bucks will be the one that rise up and finally knock LeBron off.
I think...
pending health, of course. Jabari Parker's knees are a major indication in that, too.
Yes.
And a major factor, but...
I think it's alarming for Raptors fans to be struggling in the first round at this much. Because for the longest time, the narrative that was that the Raptors are number two. No matter the seeding, the Raptors are number two, and they'll be if the Cavs falter, it will be the Raptors. I think it's alarming. I think it's a fair argument to think that they might, like, fear the deer is a thing now. Like, it's really a thing. Giannis is a monster. DeMar DeRozan, he didn't make a shot.
I'm not worried. I shouldn't say that. I do think that this matchup is a lot worse than I thought it was for the Raptors. I'm not so worried about whether or not they come out of this playoff series, though. I'm going to start to be have a Kevin mentality on this Raptors team if they lose in the first round.
Oh, are you ready? Do you have the torches ready? Because I'm lighting fire to everything if they lose in the first round if I'm Toronto. Burn it down. We can get into that in a little bit, but what is your mentality like?
But that being said, I think that Giannis is just... like
so
what and it's really stopping Giannis in transition. I'm not worried about the Raptors in the series, because I think that even in that blowout game that there were spots that you can look at that they can make adjustments in the following series. So that's fine. But Giannis, to your point, I mean, at the age of 22, in my opinion, he is better than LeBron James was at the age of 22.
I mean, fire him up, baby.
I think he is. I think he's better than Kevin Durant was at the age of 22.
I'm here for this. I like this.
Giannis Antetokounmpo is holy hell. Like, this guy, like, it sends shivers down my spine talking about the kid.
Ooh, I like that. I'm here for that type. That's the conviction that I like you talking with.
Well, he is, though.
No, Giannis is really good.
I mean, he's, like you cannot stop.
You can't stop him in transition. He's absolutely unstoppable.
There's
out of the open
nothing
court.
You can, the no. only thing you can do is wrap your arms around him and say, make some free throws.
What's his name? Who wrapped up LeBron and just took the tackle? He was on the Bulls.
Kirk Heinrich.
He just hold on for dear life.
I mean, you can't let Giannis get out in transition, because he'll kill you. I will say that the Raptors, Giannis off the court, all they need to do is feed the post.
Let me just. Okay, I looked up LeBron at age 22, his per game. Okay, he was playing 40 minutes a game. He was averaging 27 points per game. He was averaging almost 2 blocks per game, total rebounds about 7. He was an effective field goal shooter of 50.7% from 331, which is fine. Do you think Giannis matches up to that?
I mean, if you want to talk about numbers, no. I mean, I know that Giannis doesn't score the same amount of points per game, but I think that he is just as much, if not a more effective player on the court.
Stats are just...
I mean, just everything he does. He has a passing ability of LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
He has the height of Kevin Durant. You know, I mean, it's just like it's amazing.
His in the playoffs, offensive rating of 111, defensive rating of 90.
He comes in. Giannis too with those weak side blocks is magical.
Dude, he blocked a shot with his elbow. And not just like, oh, I got a hand on it and it went up and just went out of bounds. Like, he put it in the seats with his elbow.
Yeah. I'm not arguing that Giannis isn't good. I think he's amazing. I just think it's mind-blowing to me, because I just assumed the Raptors were going to get out of this.
I'm telling you.
Well, they've had their number. They had won like 13 of the last 15 games against this ball club right here. They had won the season series 3-1. Like, they have, you know, the Raptors have been in the playoffs really good on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Jason Kidd has had the Raptors' number when it comes to coaching, man.
Well, it's mm-hmm. just, no, and at what point do you start to blame the Raptors coaching a little bit? Like, the Raptors constantly going to the playoffs, and this is the same movie that we've seen before. DeMar DeRozan is taking bad shots once again. Kyle Lowry can't hit the broadside of a barn. Jonas Valanciunas is completely ineffective. Dwayne Casey's not making any type of adjustments.
I mean, I would disagree with you on the Jonas thing. On the when JV was out on the court, and when Giannis Antetokounmpo was off the court, and they were feeding the post against Greg Monroe, like the Raptors went on a huge run,
right,
and they had to bring Giannis back in. So, but it's not that I think he's ineffective. I just think against Thon Maker, there's no reason to have him out there. Go small, put Serge at the five if you're going against him. But Giannis against traditional centers, I mean, I think he does a really good job against Greg Monroe, and that's where the Raptors need to use him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you can exploit matchups, but it's going to be an issue at the end of games when he's getting beat up when he's on the floor. I don't know. I drank the Raptors' Kool-Aid this year. I thought with the depth that this was going to be it, and I thought they were finally going to get over some of these playoff demons. And I'm at the point, like, I'm just go out and say it. The Raptors lose first round, I ain't Max and Kyle Lowry.
Nope. I mean, I completely agree.
Yeah. I ain't Max and Kyle Lowry. I'm firing Dwayne Casey. I'm looking to move DeRozan, honestly.
Okay, so say they get out of the first round. How far do they have to make it before you're like, okay, this is what we're going to continue
ECF,
to go with?
ECF, minimum. Well, they'll play the Cavs second round, so they have to be competitive with the Cavs.
They built their roster to be competitive with the Cavs by getting P.J. Tucker and getting Serge Ibaka.
But they overlooked the Bucks.
to an extent, yeah. I think they did. But they need to... They need to match up well with the Cavs. And, you know, the thing is, though, if they get out of the second round, I do think that they do match up with the Cavs well. It's this particular
matchup.
They have
to get there.
They got to play some serious zone defense on Giannis, man. Make him beat you from the outside. Chris Middleton, he's a positive on the court, but he's not shooting well from beyond the arc. You got to totally zone Giannis. I mean, what you got to get the ball out of. They need to do what the Cavs are doing to Paul George.
And just...
Get the blitz everything. Get the ball out of that kid's hands.
Yeah. I'm really glad, though, that we collectively, though, are in the completely burn it down if you're Toronto and you lose in the first round.
I don't agree with burning it down like you do.
Well, what do you define burning it down? I think you think when I say burn it down, I mean literally trade everyone of value.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounded like.
No,
right there.
No.
Like, you move DeRozan, you don't Max Lowry. Like, who do you keep, though? Norman Powell and build around him?
I like Norman Powell, for what it's worth. Like, I do think I think he should play more.
He should too. And that was one of the things I saw in that blowout as I was watching Norman Powell play. I'm like, maybe they can use him a little bit more. There were some positives to take away from that blowout that there's a lot of tape they're going to watch. And, you know, this is going to be a long series. We'll see what happens. But this just came down the wire before we get out of here. Blake Griffin's done. I'm done with the Clippers.
Here's
do
my
not
comment.
Resign Blake Griffin.
Here's my comment to this. You know,
this is a spicy episode, by the way.
Blake
I like
Griffin
this.
Goes Ooh. Down, and the Clippers were losing by like 12 or 13 when Blake Griffin went down. And I went to bed thinking, oh, this is over. And then Paul George took over, and they won that game.
You mean Chris Paul?
Chris Paul, sorry. And then Chris Paul took over, and they won that game.
Chris Paul's so good.
No, he was great. I just, the Clippers, man. No break ever. And Blake Griffin.
No, literally all the breaks. Everything's breaking.
Yeah.
They're getting hurt.
It's just poor Blake Griffin.
He was so frustrated when it happened, too. You could tell he knew something was bad. He punched a chair, and I got really nervous for him, too.
Don't bull an Enes Kanter.
It's like, dude, don't do that.
Well, they all just kind of... I think the Clippers know that their window is really closing quickly, and I think the Clippers know that if they didn't make noise this year, that it probably is going to be the end of it. I mean, this is if the Clippers get bounced and they're missing Blake and they don't go very far, there are going to be these questions of does that core stay together and is this it? And if you're Blake Griffin, you feel bad. The dude wants to compete in the playoffs. The dude wants to have a real long run and get Chris Paul to this conference finals.
To
and they're
be
all trying
fair.
To win for him, and he just you feel bad because he just can't stay healthy.
To
and
be
that
fair,
stinks.
It levels the playing field in this first round.
But it's not about leveling the playing field.
Yeah,
man.
Like we don't want...
I know. You don't want somebody to get injured, but it was like...
Right. So yeah,
their
their
best big man went down.
Yeah. If you were Utah, you feel that you now have the advantage back in your scale. Like the reality is, I feel like the Clippers healthy with missing Gobert is they were going to win this series. This was a really close series. I thought going into it, I had picked Utah. Once Gobert went down, it felt like the Clippers were going to get through the series, not with ease, but were the better team.
But they lost the first game.
Well, yeah, that's I said that earlier in the pod that's huge for Utah. Like Utah did a great job of adjusting and winning that first. Like it's still competitive. I just feel like the Clippers could put this series away. At the same time, now with Blake, they're probably done now.
The fact that the Clippers still won, though, and Gordon Hayward had 21 in the first quarter. Like,
dude, Gordon Hayward's just like he's been so good.
He's made every single. Let me make sure that
he's another one who's gonna get a lot of money this offseason.
Hold on. Anyway, though.
But like you know, it's just a reminder that like Gordon Hayward's next in line to get paid.
Oh, he missed one.
Dude,
so until Friday night, he had made every free throw he had taken. He's at 95.7, shooting about 7, almost 8 a game.
You know, Gordon Hayward, he is a really attractive fellow.
He looks like Captain America. If anybody notices my tweets, every single time I talk about him during a game, I use a Captain America gif.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
He looks like Captain America.
I did not notice that.
I'm trying to get this to be a thing.
You know.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast and trying to make Justin's things a thing. We appreciate you guys listening as always. Make sure you check out our Facebook page, like us at Driving Dish NBA podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Driving Dish NBA. Follow our Instagram page, Driving Dish podcast.
Can that be our slogan? The Driving Dish NBA podcast. We try to make things a thing.
Thanks. Hey, also
Tim did try to make Stephen Curry a thing for a good a few years ago.
Hey, let us know what you think about the intro though, because we're thinking about changing it.
Yeah.
We could make it a little bit shorter, a little bit more concise, but I don't know. We've been using the same imaging for a while, which is what that's called in broadcasting land. But yeah, we want your opinion. So we'll put a poll up on Facebook and let us know what you think.
And please help us get out to Vegas Summer League so that we can get some great content for you guys. It's been a dream of ours. So visit drivingdishpodcast.com and the GoFundMe is right at the top.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Good to know.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da.
Hey, let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.